Hello, this is Fast Talkers, the podcast, and this is a kids takeover. It's half term in the UK, so we thought it was only fair to hear from them. And my word, have they got some opinions. Remember, if you do want to watch, you can subscribe to my channel on YouTube. That's Jenny Gow. Hope you enjoy. Hello and welcome to a special Fast Talkers for the half-term break, and I wanted to get some amazing talent for you to listen to agree or disagree with, and to share stories with. So this is a special kids takeover of Fast Talkers, and I'm delighted to introduce our panel of pundits. So first off, let's go to Katie. Now, Katie, tell us who you are, how old you are, and where you're from.
So, hi everybody, I'm Katie, I'm 15 years old and I'm from Newcastle, which is a city in the north of England.
I'm Liam, I'm from Perth, Scotland, and I am 13 years old.
Let's go outside the UK next and further afield. Amadi, tell us about yourself.
Hi, my name's Amadi, I'm 15 years old. I'm originally from Canada, but I currently live in Dubai and I've been an F1 fan as long as I can remember, so it's great to be on.
It's lovely to have you on. Thank you so much for joining us. And last but definitely not least, Ariel, tell us about yourself.
Hi, I'm Ariel. I'm 17. I live in Accra, Ghana, and I've been an F1 fan for pretty much almost like my whole life. Yeah.
So you guys are the experts today. We've got plenty to talk about because it feels like the wheels of F1 are finally starting to move. Now, I want to come to you first and ask about how you started being F1 fans. And Amadi, I don't think it's any secret. You're wearing a Red Bull top. Are you a Red Bull fan?
I'd say I'm more of a Sebastian Vettel fan. So I guess that can make me partially a Red Bull fan, you know, because he had most of his success at Red Bull. But no, I like most of the teams. I don't really have a specific team I support. I more, you know, gravitate towards more of a driver. That is Sebastian Vettel. But, you know, I like Red Bull. They're a great team. They've done so much for the sport in the last 15 years. But yeah, I like Red Bull, but I'm more of a Sebastian Vettel fan.
Okay, Liam, you seem to be giving away your roots as well with, is that a Ferrari top?
Yeah, so I've been a Formula One fan for pretty much as long as I can remember. I've been a Ferrari fan for as long as I can remember. But I'm starting to become more of a, like a Maddie. I'm starting to become more of a Sebastian Vettel fan, because he's a hilarious driver and he's got great personality. And the reason why I like Ferrari, first of all, their history in F1 is just incredible. And the Scarlet Reds just always attracted me.
Let's come next to Ariel. What about you? Who are you supporting? I see no shirt on. You're going to be a proper journalist today. I like that.
Yeah, so I thought I'd remain unsighted. So I just wore a plain white shirt, but I'm definitely more of a Ferrari fan. But I would just call myself an F1 fan in general because I do have some sort of, I like all the teams in different ways. I have a different attraction to teams in different ways. I like teams like McLaren because of their history. I love teams like Ferrari. Ferrari is really my most favorite team. I also like teams that don't even exist anymore, like Brawn GP. They are very special to me because of the story and Ross Brawn and also Jensen. So I really don't have a specific team, but if I was, it would probably be Ferrari. Yeah.
And Katie, I can just about make out the fact that that is a Lando Norris top. So are you giving away your allegiances? Who are you, a massive McLaren or is it just a Lando fan?
Well, I'm sort of a McLaren fan almost by default at the moment because Ricciardo and Norris have been my two favourite drivers for quite a while now. And when I was a kid, I was obsessed with McLaren Tuned. I don't know if anyone remembers that. They used to do like a YouTube series. So, you know, it's always sort of been there and now it's just come to fruition. So,
well, I'm glad you mentioned McLaren because they have done their launch this week. And I wanted to try and find out from you what you thought of the launch, because obviously we're all living in the pandemic. It's not a usual launch. They haven't got a load of journalists crammed into a room looking at a virtual car or a real car. So, Katie, let's go to you first. What did you think of the new McLaren and what did you think of their launch?
Well, I thought the launch itself was pretty well done, given the circumstances that they couldn't obviously have anybody really there except for the main core of the team. I thought it was hilarious when they got the two drivers to go and record a song. But I think judging by that, it's good that they found Formula One as a career path rather than trying to pursue music. as far as the car itself, I mean, from the first impression, it looks fairly similar to the one last year, but I'm sure underneath the facade, there's quite a lot that's changed, especially with the engine, obviously. So it'll be interesting to see what difference that makes going into this season. And that's what I'm really excited for.
I think they did a great job with the launch. I like the part where they both came in with the McLarens, you know, a nice subtle way to advertise their brand and obviously all the historic cars in the background. I think my favorite part was when Ricardo's nephew gave him that message. That was really funny. As for the car, I think there's obviously a lot of comments that, you know, that it looks almost identical to last year, like Katie said. But obviously, you know, they've done a lot of work. You can't ignore that the engineers have been working hard to get those minimal gains and, you know, incorporate the car with the Mercedes engine. So yeah, it should be interesting to see what the team can do in this upcoming season.
At first, when I saw the car, I was like, this is pretty much the same car as last year. But when you take a closer look at the car, you can see things have changed, obviously, like the floor and the barge boards and obviously like the wing of the car. And I feel like it's a very simplistic change, but it's one that like is not very noticeable, but it's still a very interesting car. Also, something else interesting was the fact that even though like they're using Mercedes engines now, they had no Mercedes branding on like the Vodafone McLaren era, which just shows like their customer team. So that was really interesting as well. I also felt like the car reveal should have been done first before all the extra stuff, because as I was on Twitter, a lot of people were live tweeting during that period, and a lot of people were just like, so couldn't they have done the car first before they did like the songs and the Q&As and stuff? But it was a really interesting launch. It was the first one I had watched in like over a year, obviously. So yeah,
I personally didn't like the whole music and the Q&A build up. I'm the kind of person who just wants to see the car. But as Amadi said, I liked Ricardo Norris's entrance, and I liked the funny bit with Daniel's nephew, and I think people were overhyping it, saying, oh, I hope to see some silver like in the olden days. And that got me a little bit hyped up. So I think seeing the car made me a little bit less excited, because obviously it was very similar, as Katie and Ariel and Amadi said, it was very similar to last year's.
I think that's one of the things I'm personally really excited about for McLaren. Their driver pairing and the fact that they're now a Mercedes powered car. How big a game changer, Amadi, do you think it is that they've got a Merc power unit in the back of that car?
It's definitely going to benefit them in terms of performance. You know, we saw that it was clearly the best engine in the field last season. But yeah, we have to see. There's always, you know, that debate over whether a customer team can actually beat the works team. We have seen that in the past, but obviously the works team they're going up with is pretty good, to say the least. You know, won the last seven. So I think it definitely will benefit them.
Let's move on to our next subject, because 23 races are on the calendar and you guys are all enthusiastic. You love Formula One for good reason. And I just wanted to find out what you thought about the number of races that we have. Ariel, let's start with you. What do you reckon? 23 race calendar for 2021.
When I first started watching F1, there was about like 19, 18 races, 20 races a year. And now 23 really seems like it's a very emotionally taxing thing, not just on like the drivers, but the people who work on the crew, like people who work with the cars, like the crew, and even the little people who you don't see, like people who move the cars around a lot. So I feel like it's very interesting how that's going to play out. And if I feel like doing this year in the middle of a pandemic wouldn't be the best to try out this kind of situation, because I feel like if we're doing 23 races, we should do it at a time where there'll be people at races and stuff, so we see whether it really benefits the fans and the people who work on the in the paddock as well, or it's just really not the best situation. Also, I feel like the 23 race calendar would be very interesting to see how it plays out. And a lot of, we have like three triple headers. I want to see how that plays out on the drivers and the teams itself. That would be very interesting to see as well.
I think we'll never really know if it's a good idea until it's happened. So it's kind of a bit of an interesting situation. But I mean, someone's had to sign off to it at some point. And, you know, you'd hope that they would have consulted with the teams and personnel before making that decision. Whether or not that's the case, I don't quite know. But I don't think it's the worst thing that's ever happened. But I also think there's a couple of races that we don't necessarily need.
Ooh, and which ones?
I'm not so keen on the idea of a race in Saudi Arabia, I must admit. I think, without getting too political and everything, some of their human rights stuff isn't exactly the image that I think F1 should want to be associating itself with. But perhaps that's a topic for another debate. But back to the point about the races, I think it is a lot. I agree that it's probably slightly too many. But if they want to try it, they can try it once. And then if it's not sustainable, they can admit that and never go back to it, hopefully.
Ariel, you were shaking your head or nodding your head, I suppose, in agreement with Katie. Do you have reservations about F1 going to Saudi Arabia as well?
I do have reservations about it because I feel like the whole We Race as One campaign, the Saudi Arabia Grand Prix doesn't really represent that in terms of like the F1's like, not policies, but like motives and like stuff like that. I feel like the Saudi Arabia Grand Prix really goes against that, but it'll still be interesting to see how that plays out.
Liam, thoughts on the 23 race calendar, and if you want to get stuck into Saudi, you go for it.
Okay, it's not going to be only Saudi Arabia, though. Like, I'll warn you now, a rant is coming up.
Okay.
23 races is far too many. As Katie and Ariel have mentioned, the fact that there's teams and members of the crew working on the car, they're going to be overworked, tired, and that shows what how Saudi Arabia is. And I don't think we should race in countries that have pure human rights records, like, and don't put on good Grand Prix, like, you know, Russia. And I think Saudi Arabia is just not ready for Formula One. If the W Series raced there, that would be amazing because it would really make a statement. But I just don't agree with going to Saudi Arabia. And as I said, 23 races is too many, let alone 22. 21 races is enough, in my opinion, because there's obviously more, there's less doubleheaders and more breaks.
Amari, you're Canadian but based in Dubai, which is, I suppose, in essence, down the road from Saudi Arabia. Are your thoughts different to quite a lot of other people's about racing in Saudi?
It's, you know, quite obvious that Saudi Arabia doesn't have the best human rights record. But on the other hand, it could be, you know, a good chance for F1 to go in there and make a difference. Like Liam said, racing there with the W Series could be a big step forward. Yeah, there's definitely, I would rather F1 race in other countries rather than Saudi Arabia, not only for human rights, but because, you know, I think there's much better tracks. But I don't think it's a complete disaster. I think they can make a positive difference and, you know, promote the We Race as One message in that country.
Tell you what, Amadi, Canada is probably one of my favorite races. It was my first race in Formula One back in 2011. I was so lucky to be at that race. But it's a great track, so I'm delighted to see it back on the calendar. Hopefully we make it there. We've talked about the negative. What are the positives of a 23 race calendar for you?
Positives of a 23 race calendar. Interesting.
Are there any?
Because I share a pretty similar view to Liam. I don't like 23 races, to be honest. It's a little bit too much. Obviously, you know, the obvious reason is it puts so much stress on, you know, the mechanics, drivers, teams. But obviously, you know, there is a bit of a conflict of interest because, you know, there may be some fans that want to see 23 races, and more races means more money for, you know, Liberty Media, the company that runs Formula One, you know, more contracts with all the races. So I think I would say if Liberty wants more races so they can make more money and we don't have, you know, a calendar that's going to balloon into like 25 races, which is, you know, what they've said is their target, I think we could have something where there's some races, like the classic ones, Spa, Silverstone, all of those type of tracks that have a permanent slot. Then you have some other races that are slightly less established that could have an alternating slot. So you have some in 1 year, some out 1 year. So that way you could have 30, 35 races all rotating, but you only do 20 per season. I think that would just add a bit more variety, would make the calendar a bit more interesting. And yeah, 23 races, it just makes it tough for, you know, the championship to go down to the wire because we haven't had that for a long time. And, you know, with Mercedes dominating with five races to go, it does get a bit dull sometimes if there's no championship fight. But yeah, I think that 20 races would be ideal, but obviously more races is, you know, what Liberty is inevitably going to do. But I think they should balance it out by having a rotating calendar.
Liam, you were desperate to jump in.
Yeah, with like a Maddie's thing. Yeah, because in the late 2000s, there was going to be a alternation between Suzuka and Fuji on who would host the Japanese Grand Prix. And there was also one in the early 2010s with the German Grand Prix. And I agree with him about tracks like Silverstone, Spa, heck, even Monza becoming permanent fixtures on the calendar. And some people say Monaco should have a lifetime contract, but in my opinion, that would only work if the Formula One cars became much thinner, because in recent years, the Monaco Grand Prix hasn't been particularly interesting, unless weather gets in the way, like obviously in 2016. Yeah, I agree with Amadi on some things. The Canadian Grand Prix should also have a permanent fixture because it's an incredible circuit. I love the Canadian Grand Prix, probably one of my favourite circuits on the calendar. Obviously, there's been a long history of street circuits in Formula One, but I personally don't agree with the idea of a street circuit because, sure, it gives chaos sometimes in races, but chaos doesn't always mean excitement necessarily. It just means a different order for how the race finishes.
Let's move on and talk about this season. We've talked a little bit about McLaren, but I want to know, what are you excited about? Who's going to do well in 2021 and who's going to have a shocker? Ariel, let's start with you. What do you reckon?
Okay, so without being biased or anything, we all know how amazing Charles and Max are. Charles is probably one of my favorite drivers, Leclerc. And obviously Max is pretty much unstoppable. So I always feel like those two are always going to have an amazing season against their teammates. But I feel like the people who can really shock us this year, I know a lot of people rate George Russell very highly, but I really feel like he's going to have a really good season this year because obviously the confidence from Sakir, like moving over, it's really like it can really benefit him. And also I feel like a driver who's really underrated is Esteban Ocon. I don't think he's like, I don't see like the way people rate Charles and Max and George and Lewis, I don't rate him the same way, but I feel like he's a very consistent, reliable driver, just like the way Lando Norris is. So even though a lot of people don't see them as like fast, super aggressive drivers, I see them as reliable drivers. So those are people I'm looking forward to this season. I don't know about Sergio Perez at Red Bull because of their history with second drivers towards Max. We've seen with Alex, we've seen with Pierre. I don't know how that season is going to end up for him if you even be in the team after Spa, after Hungary. You never know. So I don't know how that season is going to go for him. So it'll be very interesting to watch. I also want to see how the rookies do. I want to see how Yuki does against Pierre. Obviously, Pierre has been in the team much longer, so he'll probably do much better. It's interesting to see if Yuki gets the 2022 seats or if he stays in AlphaTauri, if he does super well. I also want to see how Fernando performed now that he's come back to Formula 1, because a while ago, he was saying how he doesn't want his comeback to be like that Michael's in 2010 to 2012. I really do like Fernando. I loved him when he was in Ferrari, because I really liked Fernando back then. And 2012 still kind of breaks my heart every time I think about it. So I also want to see how Fernando is going to do when he comes back to Alpine.
As a Vettel fan, I love 2012.
I'm sure you must have all been so small in 2012, though.
I was 5. I don't remember.
I think I was 8, but I didn't watch the 2012 season. I didn't start watching Formula 1 until like a while back. But I do remember, like, I think I binge watched the whole of 2012 again. I don't think when I was younger, I didn't watch four seasons, obviously, because I was a kid. And I didn't even know what I was watching. But like recently I started watching Formula One like full time, like maybe 3 or 4 years ago-ish. So then when I binge watched the whole of 2012, it just reminded me how much that pain was when I was 8 years old. I didn't understand why like Fernando was staring at the screen. I was just confused, basically.
If only they had Netflix and Drive to Survive back in 2012, that would have been one awesome program. Amadi, tell us more. What do you reckon?
So as for the season, drivers-wise, there's a few who I think are going to be quite a surprise. Firstly, Lando Norris. I definitely rate him as a future world champion. I don't think he's there yet. He's still very young. But in him, I see all the qualities of a future world champion. He's very quick over one lap. He's constantly improving in his race pace. He's making a lot less mistakes than he was in his rookie season. And I just feel he has that killer instinct. Him and Carlos were pretty close last season, but I just feel he has that slight edge over him and that, you know, he's only 21. He'll get better, you know, as he gets more experience. It'll be interesting to see how he stacks up against Ricardo. It'll be an interesting dynamic, that's for sure, because he's coming in. He's actually, you know, more established at the team than Ricardo is, but Ricardo's going to try and come in and, you know, get that alpha dog position at the team. So it'll be interesting to see how it plays out. Also, I think that Lance Stroll still has a lot of critics to silence. Being Canadian, you know, I obviously back him quite a lot. I think he gets a lot of unfair hate for being a paid driver. I think he's shown on multiple occasions that he does have talent and he can develop into, you know, a driver that is in the sport on merit rather than, you know, just because of his dad's money. Teams wise, I'd say the two teams I think will exceed expectations will be firstly Ferrari, because, you know, their 2020 season was awful. So I think that, you know, it can't get any worse. So I think the expectations will be a bit lower for them, but at the end of the day, they will bounce back because they have so many resources, you know, despite not using them the best, you know, in sometimes, but I'm sure they've done some good work on the 2021 car. They've had the year to fully sort out their engine. In 2020, you know, there was that whole thing about the fuel flow and everything. So, that's now sorted out for this year. Charles is amazing. Carlos, I'm sure he's going to do a great job. So, yeah, I think it's good things for Ferrari coming ahead. And I think finally, Aston Martin, I think they're going to do very good this year. Firstly, I already talked about Stroll. I think he's definitely going to improve, especially under someone like Sebastian Vettel. Vettel himself, obviously, he also had quite a poor year, you know, no doubt about it. But in the new environment, hopefully in a car that suits him a lot more, I think he can find that four-time world champion form that we all know and love. So, also, I think, you know, in general, I think over this season, I think the pecking order could change. I think there will be some teams at the start that will be quite competitive. But obviously next year are the big regulations. So we could see some teams who slowly bring their focus to the next year and stop developing their 21 car. So I feel like we could see some changes in the pecking order and, you know, just the dilemma of how much do you want to invest this season? How much do you want to look at the regulation changes for 22, which I know are huge. So yeah, those are my predictions.
Something that Amadi kind of alluded to, which is, I think he's right that there's going to be a lot of change this season, even though the big change comes obviously the year after, because there are quite a few drivers that I think have something to prove this season. And that always makes for a really interesting, you know, combination of things. Like one of the things I'm most excited for is Carlos and Charles at Ferrari, because I think that should just be explosive in like all the right ways. Because I think they'll, you know, respect each other, hopefully. But it should also be really like ferocious on track, because I don't think either of them are the kind of guys to hold stuff back. So, you know, obviously Carlos has got to vindicate his decision to move to Ferrari from McLaren, and Charles has got to kind of prove that he should be their star boy for the future. And then at Aston Martin as well, Stroll's got to prove to the world still somehow that he's there on merit, even though he has done in the past. But, you know, I feel like he's always going to have to continuously be proving it, just because people have short memories. And then obviously Vettel had a, well, let's not mince words, it was a bit of a shocking season. Not all his fault, though. I mean, Ferrari weren't really anywhere, but still Charles consistently outperformed him. So he's got a lot to prove as well. And then the whole thing at Alpine is one of the most fascinating dilemmas of the season, personally, because you've got Ocon, who started to come really good at the end of last season. It was a bit sort of, you know, fluctuating at the start, but he came kind of strong at the end. And then you've got Alonso returning, which is just fascinating in itself, but that combination should be really interesting. And it was interesting what Ariel was saying about the Schumacher return, but I think the one with Alonso is different, because personally, at least, I still feel like Alonso has something to prove, like he has unfinished business with Formula One. Whereas I think when Michael came back, he'd already done everything. There was like
champion.
And yeah, he was
only a two-time champion. So Amadi, first of all, why do you bully me? As a Ferrari fan, why do you bully me?
They'll win eventually. I don't know when, but eventually.
They'll either win or they'll leave the sport. There's no in between, I don't think. They'll, you know, that'll be interesting too.
Do you think they're serious about their bluffs, you know, when they talk about, you know, we'll leave if F1 doesn't do this? Do you think they're ever serious about it?
I think it's impossible to tell, really. You know, they like to kind of make these bold statements, but they don't often follow through with them. But, you know, it's like the boy who cried wolf. One time, eventually, they will actually mean it. So I don't know when that'll be, if it'll be in my lifetime or, you know, but I wouldn't be surprised if at some point there's a few more rumblings if things don't start to pick up after the regulation changes. But for a few more seasons, at least, I think they'll be fine.
And in 1980, they had the worst year in Formula One history. And then the next year, they ended up winning two races with Villeneuve in Monaco and Spain, and managed to finish top five in the constructors, despite finishing way lower down, being the second last team to score points that year. So hopefully that happens this year. As a Ferrari fan, I'm hoping that happens. And that spark between Carlos and Charles that Katie mentioned, it's like, have any of you watched the movie Ratatouille? the scene where Remy's trying the strawberry and the cheese and it like mixes up the different flavours. I think it'll be like that with the spark. And I think said this year, and with Lance, is going to be interesting, because obviously Otmar Szafnauer said that a lot of their drivers in the past have liked to carbon to try not to make it sound interesting, to say the least, with a good back end of the car. And because Ferrari didn't have that last year and the last couple of years, Seb really struggled, and hate to bring back the memories in me, but spun a lot and made mistakes a lot. But hopefully, because of what Szafnauer said, Sebastian will have a good year. And I am predicting that he will, that redemption arc will happen for Sebastian. And I'm hoping Lance has a good season too, because as Katie and Amadi alluded to, he really has something to prove, because everyone's still doubting him. I was doubting him at the start of the year, but the performances he put on this year were incredible. Turkey, for example, when he got the pole and he got two podiums this year. And that was off of merit. He was in the right place at the right time. But had he fended off Ocon, it would have been a 1-2 for Racing Point, and their first 1-2 since the 1998 Belgian Grand Prix as an entity. So if Stroll had held off Ocon, that would have been even better. But yeah, the two podiums were really good, because he beat likes of Vettel when it came to podium finishes.
Let's move on to our final topic, and we're going to have to make this quite a quick one, I'm afraid, because you guys are so good. We could carry on for ages, but we can't. So what do you think is the future of Formula One? I know it's a huge topic to try and cram in right at the end of a programme, but you guys are the future of F1 in so many ways. So I wanted to ask you what you thought. Liam, can we start with you?
I might be the only one saying this, but I think eventually, due to the environmental impact and, you know, the great how dare you Greta Thunberg quote, I think eventually F1 will have to merge with Formula E. The bosses of Formula One, the ones that have a proper passion for it, won't want us to go all electric, because we started out in 1950 as, you know, naturally aspirated. But I think for emerging the Formula E would be a good thing, because it would mean more recognisable faces, because I hate to say it, but people who have never watched Formula One before might not know who Williams is, or who Haas is, or heck, even know who Sauber is, and of course AlphaTauri. And I think that having more engine manufacturers would be great, because we're at our lowest ever in Formula One. You know, we've only had four engine manufacturers, whereas in the early 2000s we had Cosworth, we had and we had others. And obviously 2012 was one of the best seasons in F1 history. F1 merging with Formula E is the future.
I don't think that merging Formula E is the future. I feel like more sustainable things in terms of carbon neutrality and the use of biofuels. So I am a biochem and geography student. So obviously I believe in a lot of like sustainability and use of biofuels and stuff. And I feel like the use of biofuels would suit a lot of Formula One fans more, because especially the older fans, you know, like the idea of us going, even us as older fans, don't like the idea of us using more sustainable fuel. So imagine us using electric features. Also, I feel like more job opportunities in the paddock with more job diversity, such as, like, obviously, apart from the obvious mechanics and social media people, I feel like different job opportunities, such as, like, people working with, like, I keep saying biofuels because that's what I've written down, but, like, people working with more sustainable things can also help create more jobs and allow more people to experience the world of Formula One. Also, so you know how the driver participation has really helped Formula One, like, the whole of last year when people were doing streams, such as George, Charles, Lando, really brought a lot of fans to sports. And a lot of people don't realize this, but when people make fun of a lot of Drive to Survive fans, they don't realize those are people who are going to propel the sports forward. Because eventually, a lot of people are going to start watching it more because they found something that has brought it to them. Because a lot of people fail to realize that a lot of people did not start watching Formula One because their dads were Formula One fans. Started watching because of, like, what they've seen on TV, like Drive to Survive and stuff like that. So shows like that really help propel the sports forward. So even if you may not like the Drive to Survive fans or stuff like that, they really are probably the future of the future watchers and the future participants in our sports. Also, I just feel like the driver participation with fans also helps build their fan base. As you know, I feel like Lando Norris and Lewis Hamilton fans are probably the biggest fan groups in the Formula One world. And their participation with their fans really helps strengthen them. And, like, yeah, so, like, having lots of fans and having lots of fan participation really helps the sport because it attracts more people.
Truly and honestly, I think the future of Formula One is whatever we want it to be. Like, I think nothing's set in stone for what has to happen in the future. Formula One's inherently always going to be linked with environmental issues just because the nature of its carbon footprint being as big as it is. But I think as the world develops and moves forward, Formula One will have to as well, unless it wants to get sort of left as just a relic of history. But I don't think it necessarily has to be met with disinterest, the moving towards renewables and electric, equipment and stuff, because I imagine everything in the world is going to have to go more that way. So Formula One will just sort of be a byproduct of that. And by the time we reach a point where it needs to happen, everything become electric, I think so many other things will have already become electric that we'll look at it and think, why was this even a debate? Why was this something we looked at? And don't get me wrong, I completely understand the arguments against stuff like that, because it's not the history of the sport, it's not everything like that. But a lot of things have changed in the sport that weren't there in history, like one notably being the halo, which I'm sure was met with a lot of resistance, even by myself when it was first introduced. But, you know, now I think you'd be a madman to debate its being there, especially after Grosjean's crash in Bahrain. So things are always changing. Nothing stays stagnant in Formula One. That's its nature. It's fast moving. It's always developing, just like the world is. So I think that's not going to stop, and I don't think it should. So I think it's exciting times, to say the least.
I think there's a few things that F1 needs to do to remain relevant in the next, 20, 30 years. I think the first of those things is, managing this transition from internal combustion to whatever is going to be the main source of power, in the future. The obvious one is electric, but, I don't think F1 will go electric because Formula E has the exclusive rights as the only electric motorsport until like 2039. So there's obviously so many other sources like hydrogen power, biofuels. So I think F1 will probably go in that area. It's important that they remain road relevant because, they need to keep the manufacturers on. It's at an all-time low. So the bosses need to find a way to make it more enticing, for the manufacturers to join. Secondly, I think they need to make sure that they appeal to the younger audience because, the younger audience is the future. The sport simply won't survive if, young people aren't watching F1. So, but to be fair, I think since Liberty Media has taken over, I think they've done a great job with that. Social media has exploded in Formula One. I can even see, like, with my YouTube channel and the F1 YouTube community in general, there's so many great content creators out there. So I think they've done a good job with that. And obviously Drive to Survive, it's definitely something that needs to continue. And finally, I think something that sort of overlaps with it, I think the sport, all aspects of the sport, it just needs to become more accessible. The obvious thing is, drivers getting into the sport. In the past few years, I've been following all the junior categories a lot more. And, you know, it's really sad to see all of these talented drivers who cannot make it to Formula One, either because there's not enough seats or because of money. And then, you know, I don't want to criticize, but, you know, guys like Mazepin who are getting in, not necessarily on talent, more because of money. You know, it's a shame, like guys like Callum Ilott cannot get in. But yeah, I think they need to make it more accessible in the sense that you shouldn't have to pay millions and millions of dollars, you know, to fund it. I know that does sound a bit unrealistic, but they could find a way, you know, F1 to, you know, fund some of the other lower series, you know, because it's a drop in the bucket compared to the budget that the Formula One guys have. And also making it more accessible for the fans. You know, I think that, you know, they should, I don't really like the switch they've made to the pay, you know, behind the paywall TV. I think it does make it a bit difficult, you know, for fans to engage with it. It can seem a bit daunting, but yeah, I think those are the three things that F1 needs to do to stay relevant. They need to manage this transition. They need to make it appeal to the younger generation a lot more and make it more accessible.
That's all we've got time for. But I did want to let, and Maddie, you have your own YouTube channel, as does Liam. So do you want to just give it a quick plug? Because if people want to see more of you, then they can do, can't they?
So my YouTube channel is called Kids Love F1. So I upload content usually with my opinion on some of the news stories that are coming out in F1 or some very controversial topics. And I also like to do some F1 history videos where I tell some, you know, slightly less well-known stories about the history of F1. So that's my main type of content. So if you like it, go check it out and help me get to 1,000 very soon. Yeah.
Liam, what's your YouTube channel?
Well, Jenny, as you know, I'm a massive F1 history nerd. So mostly what my channel is just going through the history of Formula One and talking about, you know, stories like Madi, but trying to make it original, of course. But yeah, my YouTube channel is Liam Talks Motorsports. I'm on a bit of a hiatus at the moment, mental health, of course, but hopefully everything's back to normal soon. I love making YouTube content.
Don't we all? Ariel, what about you? What do you want to do? Do you want to be in Formula One when you're a bit older?
Yeah, definitely. When I was picking my A-levels, I picked biochem and geography. I wanted to work in like anything to do with biofuels or chemical combustion, stuff like that. So if there's any way I could get to work at F1 that way possible, that would be amazing. But also, I'm also like a journalist, like for my school stuff. I run my school's newspaper and I've written a bunch of essays for the Queen's Commonwealth like essay competition. That's also like another thing I do on the side. So if I could get to work at F1 in any way like that too, that'd also be amazing, basically like that.
That's cool. Yeah. So cool. And Katie, what about you? What would you hope your future's like with motorsport?
Well, I'd more be interested in like the journalistic broadcasting side of things. I'd love to be a TV presenter or a commentator, like for, you know, one of the big TV companies and stuff, because I really like being on camera and I kind of like not the pressure, but I like the thinking on your feet and like trying to, you know, come up with heat of the moment stuff. Like, I just think it's really exciting, and combining that with my love of Formula One would seem like the perfect combination. So hopefully that's somewhere in my future. And, you know, you'd get to travel to so many unique places that otherwise you'd have no cause to go to. So it's, you know, it's a win-win really. So that's my dream basically.
Feel like I need to watch out.
We're coming for you. Yeah.
I love
just like
that.
In your rear view mirror, you just see us coming nearer. So
I will be happy to hand over the baton when the time is right. Guys, thank you so much for joining us. It's been a real pleasure to talk to you. You've been a mine of very useful information for a lot of people. And I wish you the very best of luck with your careers, with your studies, with your mental health and with lockdown. So thank you all.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.